From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, psychic predictions. Here's what's happening. Republican senators are expressing mounting impatience with the federal mask mandate for travelers, arguing that the lifting of restrictions in most public places should extend now to airplanes, rail, and transit. In a markup of a rail and safety legislation, the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee rejected along party lines an amendment introduced by Senator Rick Scott of Florida that would end the mandate, but not before Senator Brian Satz of Hawaii acknowledged that he, too, was feeling impatient. See what happens. A coronavirus outbreak at the U.S. Embassy in Afghanistan has left one person dead and more than 100 people infected there, spurring a lockdown Thursday with no exceptions, they said. Well, hundreds of Southwest airline flights were delayed or canceled again as the company sought to resolve disruptions from earlier in the week amid a pickup in summer travel. The headaches for Southwest, which is widely credited for pioneering the low-fare airline business model, began on Monday night when a problem with a weather data supplier prevented the airline from safely flying planes. The issue was resolved within hours, but then Tuesday, the airline suffered its own technological problems, resulting in half of its flights that day being delayed and many more being canceled. Spillover from that episode caused Wednesday's problems, with about 10% of Southwest flights canceled and another 19% delayed by mid-afternoon. I hope they fix it all. They say that is. Incidents of unruly behavior from airplane passengers has now risen to an unprecedented level this year. But why? Let's check in with resident psychiatrist Dr. Peter Breggin. Peter, why are people going nuts on planes?
Well, the data's right there, George. Three-quarters of the people who are really losing their minds temporarily on the airplanes, it's about masks. That's a fact that they've put out now. And I suspect that a lot of it has to do with other aspects of COVID as well. So I thought what I'd like to do this evening is to address people who are really getting frustrated and angry.
Sure.
And losing their tempers, and whether it's about COVID or not, but I'll couch it in the terms of COVID. We all have that tendency to blow our tops, to get angry. We need, first of all, to recognize that it just about never helps. It's always self-destructive. We get embarrassed about ourselves.
You get nothing done.
Yeah, we realize we're hurting other people, George. But there's something good about it, which is it's a signal. It shows we're alive and we're upset and we're angry. And that's important. So instead of letting the temper tantrum come out, which is like, I give up, I'm going to be like a kid and have a temper tantrum. Look at it seriously and say, what's going on here and what can I do about it? And a lot of Americans are feeling abused by the COVID-19 stuff. Your news reports that you gave dealt a lot with that kind of thing. And I think we need to take it seriously, not by having temper tantrums, but in fact, by leaving the anger behind and joining in with more than half of America, which is fed up with a lot that's going on politically, and say to yourself, I'm going to find some people and I'm going to do something positive. And I can tell you that I just want to tell the world that the work Ginger and I have been doing with groups around this country who want to end the COVID and who want to really refound America and increase our freedom, these are not angry people. These are people who know they're doing God's work, doing the right thing, and they're working together. And, you can find these people, Google, go to the radio stations that are dealing with freedom, and go to the TVs, and you'll find the folks. And once you find one or two groups, you'll just be finding lots of them.
We need more of them, Peter. We need more of them, to be sure. Peter's website, Breggin.com. Even as the nation rebounds from the coronavirus pandemic, more than 2 million homeowners are behind in their mortgages and risk being forced out of their homes in a matter of weeks, according to a Harvard University housing report. That's not good. Those Iranian Navy ships, believed to be originally headed toward Venezuela and Cuba, have apparently changed course and are now steaming north up the west coast of Africa. Who knows what they're doing? They think they might have arms on those ships. China launched the first astronauts to its space station, taking a significant stride in what some U.S. officials have dubbed a new space race between the two countries. It's intriguing as well. What else is going on in the skies? Here's Kevin Randall with his weekly UFO report. Hi, Kevin. What do you got for us? Kev, you there? Nope, he's not there. Okay, well, we'll try to get him back at another time. But in a moment, we're going to talk about miracles on Coast to Coast, so get ready for that. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Before we go back to our guest, Mark Mincola, The Way of Miracles, let's go back to Kevin Randall, who's got his UFO report. I thought you got abducted, Kevin.
The men in black got me.
That's what I thought. Anyways, what do we have this week?
Well, George, as you know, I have been suggesting that the report due to Congress next week will be less than startling. I believe, based on the past and on some of the things that are being said out there, that the report will focus on about 120 cases in which there were limited, unobstructed views of the UFO-UAP, and there'll be a suggestion that drones, which are unmanned so that the effects of excessive accelerations won't have the human crew to crush, are responsible for many of those sightings. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking with Jacques Vallée about classified section of Project Blue Book. He suggested that the cases hadn't been classified, but that's just not accurate. Many of the early cases were classified as secret. You can see where the classification markings have been crossed out. The other thing is that before there was an official investigation, General Twining of the Air Materiel Command had ordered an unofficial investigation beginning in December of 1946. This was 6 or 7 months before Kenneth Arnold made his sighting in June of 1947. At that point, that unofficial investigation morphed into an official one. Orders were issued and Project Sign began in January of 1948, but the public was told the name was Project Saucer. In 1949, it was announced that Project Sign had been concluded and an official report was issued. There was no national security issues and no evidence of alien spacecraft flying around. However, it was merely a name change. Project Grudge was born with the same people in the same offices at the same base. In 1952, it was announced that Project Grudge had been concluded. The huge report claimed that there was no national security issues and there was no evidence of alien spacecraft flying around. But it was another name change and Project Blue Book was born. Blue Book remained in operation until 1969 when it was closed as a result of the University of Colorado study it was paid for by the Air Force. This was the Condon Committee, and they concluded that there was no national security issues, there was nothing to be learned from further study, and the Air Force had done a good job of their investigations. There were, of course, issues. The official figures were that the Air Force had investigated 12,618 sightings, and of those, 701 remained unidentified. This is not true. There are more than 13,000 sightings in the files. Many are in a section labeled additional reported sightings, not cases. These are everything from newspaper clippings to intelligence reports on some of the sightings, but were not apparently submitted through the official channel. Although there are only 701 sightings labeled as unidentified, there are many more which are not. I took a representative sample of cases labeled as insufficient data for scientific analysis and found that there was something like 4,000 labeled that way.
Wow.
It means there was no solution for the sighting, but it is outside that dreaded unidentified category. I will note here that about a third of the cases investigated by the Condon Committee in the late 1960s had no solutions to them. One was labeled as a phenomenon so rare it had never been seen before or since. Not much of a solution. And that brings us around to next Friday's projected release of the UFO-UAP study. If history is any guide, then we will see the same sort of misdirection, misinterpretation, and misinformation. It won't move us toward disclosure, but that's what the deep state wants. They want to keep it buried. And that covers it for now, George.
Right, my friend Kevin. Thank you for your report. Now, let's go to Mark Mincola, PhD, back with us after a 7-year hiatus. He's a natural health care practitioner. He has transformed thousands of lives over the past 30-plus years. He has integrated ancient Chinese energy techniques with cutting-edge nutritional science. He is an expert on all these areas. His most recent book is called The Way of Miracles, Assessing Your Super Consciousness. Mark, welcome back.
George, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It has. It's gone by too darn fast.
It really has. And this book just came out, isn't it?
It's actually, it's going to be released on the 22nd of June, so it's next Tuesday it's coming out.
We're ahead of the game then, aren't we?
You are indeed. And the film, actually, the film that accompanies the book, and the movie is going to be distributed in 53 countries. That comes out next Friday, so it's 4 days behind the book.
Good for you. When we talk about miracles, what does that mean to you?
Well, George, over the past 37 years, I've given counsel to 60,000 appointments that are holistic natural medicine appointments. And we've seen so many people have remarkable turnarounds, cancer recoveries, people who've shrunk tumors, people who've beaten so many odds, and people who've defeated disease in so many different ways. I contend that we have a limitless self and a limited self, and I contend that we don't spend enough time in our limitless self. And I think miracles are just natural results of working at a higher level of frequency. I think, you know, we're all energetic properties. As we learned in 1937, Dr. Werner Heisenberg won the Nobel Prize for telling us that everything in the universe is 99.999% energy and 0.001% matter. So we tend not to live that way in our culture. We're a very material culture. Obviously, we're very inclined to think of things in a material context. But the truth of the matter is we have a limitless capability. We have a limitless self. We have a spirit. We have a soul. We have higher forms of energy within our being that we can tap into. And I think when we do that, we afford ourselves a tremendous amount of leeway in terms of working with miracles and making things happen at a level that the mundane mind and the mundane self can't do.
Do you think miracles have any divine providence behind it, or is it just happen?
I think they do, George, but I also think we have a divine nature to ourselves as well. Like I said, we have one of ourselves is a mortal self. It's a different set of properties than our immortal self. And I believe we have a divine property within our being that taps right into that whole process. And I think when we engage, when you think about it from a scientific perspective even, you can think about it four different brainwave states, beta, alpha, theta, and delta. Delta brainwaves are when we're producing below 4 cycles per second. And by slowing down that brain, the objective is to lower our neurotic tendencies and to kind of focus our intention and focus our concentration at very higher levels of consciousness. I think when we're in that zone of delta frequency and higher consciousness and really focus, we can perform remarkable things.
Well, now, what got you to that conclusion?
37 years of observing patients and working with them and just tapping into them and working not just at a mundane level. You know, nutrition's important. We do a lot of nutrition work, obviously, as you pointed out, and we spend a lot of time with supplements, natural supplements, things of that nature. Those are important parts of the process. But there's a deeper connection that people need to have sparked. And I think as a practitioner, you need to see that, you need to engage that, and I think that when you yourself as a practitioner attend to that level and you inspire a patient to attend to that level, I think magical things can happen and often do. And we've seen it time and time again. The movie bears that out. The film is going to be released, as I said, next Friday. The film, The Way of Miracles, has patients. I'll give you an example. One woman is 37 years old. She came here from Russia. She had a brain tumor the size of a tennis ball in her frontal lobe. And we worked really hard on her program. We worked hard spiritually. We worked hard mentally. We worked hard in so many different respects, but nutritionally as well. But after 5 months, the tumor shrunk. She's been tumor-free for 9 years. So that's just one example. We have a number of different remarkable cases in the film that bear out the fact that by working at deeper levels, by working at deeper brainwave states, by working at a deeper level of consciousness and concentration and positive thinking and good nutrition, good things can happen. Things can happen.
Have you had a miracle story happen for yourself?
Yes, indeed, that's true.
What happened?
Well, ironically, when I set out to do this film and to get this book written, I met a producer in New York City who's a great producer, Christine Vertilla-Bresson, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant producer. So we met on weekends pretty consistently for about a 3-year period prior to the film being worked on. And lo and behold, we had this great idea that we were going to have patients that have been through remarkable recoveries, miracle recoveries, that had great stories to tell. And we're going to try to tell those great stories in the film. Right in the middle of it, I was bitten by a Lyme tick.
Oh, geez.
And I suffered horribly with neuroborrelia. So I had neurological symptoms that were really horrible. The classic inflammatory joints and muscles I was really, really bad.
Did it hit you fast,
at
too?
At one point, I was so sick from the Lyme tick that I fell on the bathroom floor and hit my head. I was on the floor for 19 hours. And then after I woke up from the being on the floor, I actually couldn't move. I realized I couldn't move my arms and legs. So I was actually paralyzed for 10 days. I was in the hospital. They didn't know why I was paralyzed. They couldn't figure out the reason behind them. They knew that the Lyme was existent and all that.
Mark, I got to ask you, you seem to be fidgeting your phone. Can you keep it still?
Sure, yes.
Okay. But go ahead with your Lyme story.
So the long story short is they weren't sure whether I was going to ever walk again. They weren't sure if I was going to ever lose my paralysis. But I just felt that if I continued in that way, that my life was going to be the kind of life that I wouldn't want to live. So when I was on that bathroom floor for those hours, it was 15 hours. 15 hours I was on the bathroom floor, I decided that I was going to work within my spirit, work within my deepest self. I was going to become profoundly determined to bail myself out of the situation, to turn it around. I worked really hard, and it didn't work right away. But because I was so determined to make my miracle happen, and I was so confident and so positive about it, I'm sure that I made a difference because I was able to walk 10 days later. And the physicians I was working with were stunned. They couldn't believe that I was able to walk. But it was a horrible experience. And you know, the fact is that it's been 5 years that I've been clear of the disease now. So
good for you. So we have the ability to create our own miracles.
We do. We do. But we have to tap into a deeper level. Again, we're so busy paying our bills. We're so busy dealing with COVID-19. We're so busy dealing with the conundrum of day-to-day life that I think many of us miss out on the whole process of tapping into a deeper, more refined, more powerful self. And I think that by tapping into your more powerful self, I think you're afforded the access to remarkable miracles. We do have the power. There's no question in my mind.
How can we – do miracles just come to us sometimes, though, too, when we don't expect them?
Sure. I think there's divine providence, as you were saying earlier. I think that's something that happens as well. But I still believe in my heart that the nature of our own divine self, our soul, if you will, our source, if we really connect with our source, with our soul, that I think our divine expansion, expanding our divine presence, I'll say, puts us in a better position to have those miracles happen in our lives. And they do come to those people that I think are more open to the process of developing and cultivating a higher consciousness.
Do you have to be a believer in miracles, Mark, in order for them to occur?
I say there's four aspects to miracles. Reject, accept, expect, or create. I think you have to at least accept. I think those people who reject them are going to call them something else even if they happen.
Right.
I think the process needs to unfold and evolve between acceptance, expectancy, and then ultimately, hopefully, creativity so that your own volition is involved in the process of actively engaging your miracles. But I think miracles are going to happen to those people who at least believe at a level of acceptance.
Those who reject miracles, what, as you say, they come up with other excuses. They may say it's luck and stuff like that.
Yeah, other rationale. In other words, hey, you really had a remarkable miracle. Nah, it's not a remarkable miracle. It's just that finally the medication started to work or some such mm-hmm. thing. I think they're going to find a rationalization that fits their story, that it fits their perception of such things. I don't think the people who are rejecting the miracles are going to necessarily feel that they have an inclination to accept the possibility of them being real.
When they reject it, is it because they're negative in the first place? I mean, why would they do that?
I just think that there are different, you know, they say there's seven stages, seven levels of consciousness. And I think when you have like a level seven of a higher consciousness, I think things like believing that you can create miracles comes a little bit more naturally to you. People at a level one, level two consciousness are just more, they're just more logic. They're not bad. There's nothing wrong with them. They're not less than anybody else. They're just more logically oriented. They're more skeptical. They're less inclined to accept. That's just their nature. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just think they're a different type of thinker, a different type of person.
The name of the book is The Way of the Miracles, The Way of Miracles, Assessing Your Super Consciousness. And Mark Minkola's websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to take calls with him next hour here on Coast to Coast, but we're going to talk more about miracles and how they're created in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Also, don't forget, free YouTube channel. Just put in Coast to Coast AM Official when you go to YouTube.com and put that right in the search bar. Summer starts on Sunday. Wow, it's also Father's Day coming up on Sunday as well. We'll be taking calls next hour with our guest, Mark McCullough, as we talk about miracles. So share your miracle stories with us as well. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our special guest, Mark McCullough, his book, The Way of Miracles, comes out next week. Mark, we're talking about the miracles and whether there was divine providence behind it or not. How many people think God is that divine providence?
I suspect a lot of people do, George. I think that there's so many different religious and spiritual perspectives right now, especially more than ever nowadays. But I think that the majority of people who are of the classically trained religious mind are more inclined to think that that is the case. And I think that there's another group of people that kind of understands that there's something within them, something deeper, something more powerful within them. They can call it a soul, a spirit, a source. And there's a growing number of people that just are tapping into the fact that there's a higher self that can actually do some remarkable things and perhaps should be considered divine as well.
I keep thinking of the movie It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart, where he was contemplating doing himself in. And they sent down an angel to save him. And, the angel pretended to be drowning, and George Bailey jumped in and saved him. And that's the beginning of a great movie, as you just said. Would you consider that a true miracle, the way they handle that?
I think it's a beautiful story. And I think that there's a lot of people that can relate similarly to the prospect of so many different spiritual supports, whether we talk about spirit guides nowadays more than ever. We talk about angels as well. So I do believe that angels and spirit guides are involved in so many different life processes. And I think there's so many people that have had miracle experiences with the help of spirit guides and angels. I think it's become more common than ever.
Mark, not everybody gets the miracle. Some people die of cancer. Some people have bad luck. Some of these things just don't happen for them. Why?
Well, I think that throughout the course of a life, it's my feeling that we all have miracles at some point in our lives. I don't think we have all the situations in our lives resolved by miracles, unfortunately, but I do believe that even the person that didn't have the good fortune of a miracle, say at the end of a given life that ended too short, had other experiences throughout the course of their life while they were in the prime of their life that represented miracles of some sort or other. So I think we've all been blessed with miracles in a variety of different ways and in a variety of different times in our lives, but that doesn't mean that it's going to happen all the time to everybody.
Is there a little luck involved sometimes?
I think there's a little luck involved with everything. I suspect that is the case, but I think that what we write about in the book and what we're talking about specifically in this case from my experiences is that I've observed so many different patients, as I said, 60,000 appointments over the last 37 years. And again, the film bears this out. We've had people who were deemed infertile, who've had three children since. We've had people who were diagnosed with Parkinson's who are running 3 miles a day. There's amazing stories in the film and in the book as well that bear out the fact that there is clearly something happening at deeper levels that we have access to if we're to simply tap into it.
The film, The Way of the Miracles, is like a who's who of Coast to Coast guests, including Deepak Chopra, Bruce Lipton. Who else is in there?
Shamini Jain is in it. There's a number of Rupert Sheldrake is in it.
Mm-hmm. There's a miracle there. He got stabbed almost to death years ago. Did you know that?
That's exactly correct. Manos Kafatos is in it as well. There's a number of really wonderful people. It is definitely a who's who, no question about it.
Do you have to be religious to accept miracles?
I think you have to at least be spiritual.
Okay.
I think that to have a connection and to have a willingness to accept, expect, or create at a deeper level is prerequisite.
And in the book, The Way of Miracles, you give techniques to help create a miracle, don't you?
Yes, we do. Again, the key point here is that by developing delta consciousness, they consider there's different brainwave states. And when people meditate, for example, or pray, they go into alpha brainwave states. And it's a very deeply relaxing state, and it's super beneficial for your nervous system, et cetera. But if you go deeper, you end up in theta, and then if you go beyond theta, you go into the depth of delta brainwave states. And it's my contention that delta is where miracles are can be plucked, if you will, or can be cultivated. And I think that there's exercises in the end of each chapter in the book that help the reader to perform simple exercises, breathing exercises, meditation-type exercises, trance-type exercises that enable them to tap into delta brainwave states and to be in that environment, that mode, that energy field where they can actually tap into miracles more readily.
Mark, what do you think of prayer?
I think prayer is a remarkably important part of this whole process. I think prayer moves us beyond rejection of miracles, like I said a moment ago, into at least an acceptance, expectancy, or creation level. I think a lot of people who really are prayer warriors, people who've really gotten accustomed to praying intensively and really believing in their prayer and having a strong positivity about their prayer, are creators of miracles. I think they're the people that are making miracles more readily than those who reject. I think that creation is our prayers, no question about it.
Would you say that people who are good people generally will experience more miracles than people who technically aren't good?
No, I don't think so. That's not my experience. I think that the good and bad component brings in a realm of judgment or something like that, I think. And I think that there's been people who have not necessarily been the greatest of people. And when you think about their life experience, their productivity of their life, the end result of their personality and their life experience and their life record, if you will. But good or bad, I think miracles are available to everybody. I think the other thing is I think people can actually turn around quickly. I think that I've seen a lot of patients have dramatic shifts, transformational changes overnight. And I think that there's a lot of people who can start off rejecting miracles and not having the best of life records, as they say, but then suddenly turning around and changing things and having more of an acceptance of positivity, miracles, and blessings. And I think there's such a thing as grace that actually brings miracles to those who would perhaps to some not appear deserving.
I was going to say, once you see the miracle occur, does it change the individual in a positive way?
Oh, there's no question about that one. That's a universal yes. I say that's an absolute slam dunk, yes. I think that what I've noticed over the years is that when patients start off with a doubter's perception, a doubter's tendency, a rejection response when it comes to the issue of miracles, that if they have the miracle happen in their lives and they beat the odds, they generally change drastically. They transform in drastic ways. They become more inclined to accept, to expect, and to create, and to brighten their life with a tremendous amount of positivity that takes the place where there was not hope initially. So I think there doesn't have to be hope, but I think there has to be grace. There's no question about the fact that grace works in strange ways.
Well, another great story, great film, A Christmas Carol with Ebenezer Scrooge.
Sure.
There's a perfect example of someone who was just a non-believer, and all of a sudden miracles occur, and it changes him 100%.
Great story.
It really is. And I think that happens time and time again. We're going to take calls with Mark next hour here on Coast to Coast. And if you have a miracle story that you would like to share, jump aboard and give that to us too. And what if somebody, though, is truly evil? Why should they get a miracle?
Well, I don't think if we were all running the universe, we might have a different set of choices regarding that stuff. But I think that the way the universe works out is everything is wide open at all times. Everything's on the table. So I think it's not always going to work out the logical way or the way we'd anticipate it to work out. And I think grace, like we said a minute ago, transcends all logic.
Well, it really does. What would you like people to learn from the book, The Way of the Miracles?
I'd like them to learn that they are more than they think they are. I'd like them to learn that there's a tremendous well of possibility within everybody's soul, within everybody's being. And if they're willing to go deeper within themselves, and if they're willing to kind of tap into their source, and if they're willing to go a little bit beyond to reach beyond their grasp, I guess I'd say, spiritually, I think they can do things miraculously in ways that they'd never imagined before.
If you had to say miracles occur from either divine providence, godlike, angels, or individuals create the atmosphere for the miracle, if you had to pick one of the two, what would you pick?
I'm going with the individuals. I just don't know that they'd all know that. I'm not sure, like I said earlier, I'm not sure that they're aware of the fact that they're able to do that, and that they're the ones giving themselves, that they're willing to give themselves credit for being the initiators, being the creators. I think that a lot of people tend to doubt themselves, but I think that they're making more miracles than they're aware of. And I think it's a matter of getting to know yourself a lot better and a lot deeper, and having more faith and trust in your ability to expand your consciousness and perform at a miraculous level and to tap into your limitless capabilities.
Mark, there have been miracles performed on little kids who are sick or might have cancer, and some dramatic things happen for them. Is it because of the belief of the parents that get this done, or does the little child, who probably doesn't know what a miracle is, gets this done?
Something that I've noticed with my work is there's a lot of transposing.
And what's that?
In other words, I can create my miracle, or you can actually pray for me and wish for me and hope for me and smile when you're with me and all that stuff. And I think that your energy that you're projecting to me can help transpose that process. I think that when you have a beautiful little child that you want to save, you want to send as much healing possibility to as you possibly can, you can actually generate enough energy to transpose the process and to engage the process by sending it to that child. So I think that we have the ability to not only produce miracles in ourselves, but to share them and to transpose, send them to other people.
That's pretty dramatic. So we have the ability to create miracles for other people.
Yes.
Wow. Do they need to know what you're doing?
I think that there's an unwritten spiritual law that says you're gonna be considerate of them by not violating them, going behind their back, so to speak. You're gonna tell them that you're doing it. But are the mechanics of that such that it's required? No, I don't think it is. I think that you still could have that effect on somebody. And I'm sure if your intention is good, that's the most important component of that whole thing. But I just think that there's an unwritten spiritual law that you want to notify them and let them know that you're sending them something and you're wishing and hoping and praying for them. I think that's only going to help them. They know about your care for them anyway.
Dr. Mark Mancola with us, PhD. Since you've been doing this, you've concentrated a lot on health miracles. Why is that?
Because when I first started working, I noticed things happening, and I said to myself, is this uncommon, or is this something that's the way the game of life works? And I was mystified by seeing miracle recoveries and miracle experiences that patients would engage in. And I was curious as to whether this was the way life is, or is this something that needs to be talked about more, we need to learn more about, study, and bring into conversation. And so I decided that I needed to write a book about it, make a film about it, and to bring the conversation to a higher level of awareness and to bring it up and to learn more about it. So I think that the inspiration came from just observing patients, and I think that there's a lot to be had from tapping into this process of observing miracles.
Why do people sometimes, Mark, get so emotional in a positive way when a miracle occurs?
Well, because for starters, you're anticipating suffering and pain. You know, somebody that you love is hurt, somebody that you love is sick, somebody that you love has a terminal illness, and you're anticipating, you're bracing yourself for the worst. I just wish and hope and pray that they're going to be okay. And you spend so much time pumping energy into that, like it's transposing, like I said a little while ago. And I think that when that finally does happen for you, you could only expect yourself to just burst forth with tremendous emotion, because it's such an exciting and such a powerful response that you feel so blessed by, that it's just overwhelming.
It is overwhelming, and it's illuminating for you too, isn't it?
It's a beautiful process.
Since you've been doing this, which has been how many years now?
37.
37 years. What's that one miracle that you have witnessed that you would tell people for the rest of your life about?
There was, actually the film talks about it. There was a woman who she had breast cancer, and she was kind of down, and she was kind of depressed, And she was explaining in her story in the film how she actually, her family wanted to go on a ski trip. So she went on a ski trip and with her family, and she wasn't about to ski because she was saying, you know, I didn't feel that good. And I just,
and she had the cancer and everything, right?
Exactly. Breast cancer, advanced breast cancer. So she said, her family said, how about come on the bunny slope and give it a try? Nah, well, it's a gorgeous day. It's sunny. It's radiant. It's beautiful. Okay, what the heck? I'll just give it a try. So she went and she rented some bunny hill skis, and she tells her story. She said that something changed her when she started to ski down that hill, and there was just a free feeling that she had about things, and she just opened up her heart and opened up her soul, and she said she burst out in tears skiing down that slope. And lo and behold, she got to the doctors the following week, and they couldn't find her cancer.
Oh, my gosh. What a story. Gone.
Gone, absolutely gone. I couldn't find it.
How do you explain this?
It's a miracle.
Truly. Truly. I mean, what did she do to create that miracle, or did somebody pray for her or do something else?
Well, as she tells the story in the film, we changed her diet, of course. We put her on a strict diet. We corrected
that
her.
That helped.
Her chemistry and worked on her health and had her taking her supplements and doing all the things that you might expect we'd have her doing. But I think that there was something that happened when she was on that ski slope. And when she tells the story in the film, I cry every time I see it. I can't back the tears.
That's wonderful.
It's a mess when I see it.
I get emotional sometimes too during episodes and things like that. You know, it's human.
Of course, there's some beautiful times in life that require it.
And we need miracles now, Mark, more than ever.
More than ever, George.
We're going to take a short break and come back with phone calls for you. And if you want to share a miracle story with us, just blow our minds with it. Mark's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The name of the book, which comes out next week, we're ahead of the game here, is called The Way of Miracles, Assessing Your Super Consciousness. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.